You pay with your credit card, the money is out of sight, out of mind. But your payments are somebody else's profits. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, today the 18th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Here with a thought experiment. You buy something somewhere, often with a credit card, increasingly online. How do you suppose your money gets from you to where it's going? There is, of course, a whole infrastructure set up to move those dollars around. It is known, not terribly cleverly, as payment processing. And it's where we begin today because we learned this morning a finance technology company called FIS is going to pay $43 billion to buy an e-commerce payment processor called Worldpay. You have never heard of those two companies, probably, but they know you and they know your money. And this deal is the latest move in a really busy year or so plus for mergers and acquisitions in the payments sector. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson gets us going.
A big part of this story is a race for scale. Rajesh Kandaswamy is with the research firm Gartner.
The larger you are able to cut cost. You know, you run large number of transactions on a common technology platform.
Brings your processing costs down.
If you have investment in, say, how do you manage security and fraud, that investment in technology, now as two companies consolidate, you can use the same technology.
There were a record 126 mergers and acquisitions last year in global payment processing, according to Dealogic. So far in 2019, there have already been 22. The more deals there are, the more deals there'll be.
When one company announces a large deal, then the other companies have to look around and see, how do we want to respond to that?
Colin Gillis with Chatham Road Partners, a hedge fund advisory firm.
It makes the remaining companies look around and say, what do I need to do to become competitive or to remain competitive?
But this is also about an industry that's still very much in transition. Paying with your phone or sending money to a friend with an app might not feel revolutionary anymore, but the transition to digital payments still has a long way to go, says David Francione. He runs the financial tech practice at Capstone Headwaters, an investment banking advisor.
A lot of corporations are still paying the old antiquated way using paper checks. Only in the past few years we've seen more and more payment being processed electronically.
He says e-commerce payments, while already massive, are still in the early innings. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
The macroeconomic phrase of the day today is regulatory capture, and it comes to us via all the news over the weekend about Boeing and the Federal Aviation Administration, and who was doing what about certifying Boeing's 737 MAX series airplanes as safe for flight. Marketplace's Mario Segura has that one.
It's called regulatory capture because it describes an industry or a company, say Boeing, capturing an agency and starting to influence regulations.
That generally leads to regulations that either are too weak to protect the public.
Amit Narang is with the consumer advocacy group Public Citizen.
Or we have situations where there are no regulations because industry opposes them.
There are a few ways an industry can capture its regulator. Mark Niles teaches law at American University.
There's sort of the most villainous one, which is the notion that powerful members of the industry meet secretly with the heads of the agency and sort of literally dictate to them what they're going to do.
Niles says usually it's less nefarious. Industry executives leave the private sector to work for a federal regulator.
And therefore, even if they're trying to act in good faith, it's their nature to try to act in support of those industry objectives.
Then there's self-regulation, letting a company play a role in certifying its own products. Niles says that can lead to regulatory capture. But Chris Edwards at the Cato Institute says there's a reason the FAA did that with Boeing.
Boeing, they have far more expertise technically on the masses of tens of thousands of components on the aircraft. There's no way that a federal regulatory agency could be as expert as the company itself.
The FAA says the 737 MAX 8 was approved using its standard procedure and that the review took almost 5 years. I'm Mariel Segura for Marketplace.
Not for nothing, but there was an OPEC meeting today. The oil cartel gathered in Azerbaijan, at which it turned out there was some patting of themselves on the back because OPEC members like Saudi Arabia and Nigeria are, contrary to their usual practices, keeping their promises. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Scott Tong explains what's going on there.
At today's meeting, OPEC members confirmed they're awfully close to their goal a collective pledge to cut world oil production by 1.2 million barrels every day. And that's notable because typically...
the members of OPEC cheat 96% of the time.
Jeff Colgan studies energy politics at Brown University, and he ran the numbers, suggesting that OPEC members historically don't do what they say. It's an honor system, no enforcement.
Think about Saudi Arabia's position. It gets frustrated with the other members of OPEC, but what can it do? There's no international court. There's nothing really short of, you know, military invasion.
So why cheat? Think about it. The market gets tight, prices go up, and it is tempting to make a quick buck. Leo Drolis is an independent oil economist in London.
If everyone else manages to comply or believes in compliance, and you break away, especially if you can hide your non-compliance, you gain more than the others.
In recent years, he says notorious serial cheaters have included Iran, Libya, and Venezuela. Today, though, oil consultant Sarah Vakshuria says it's hard to sell on the sly. There's technology to confirm a country's oil supply and storage.
From the satellite photos, you can see how the storages are getting filled or emptied. So you can kind of have an estimate of the production, but also you can track the tankers on the export side.
The question is, why the sudden outbreak of honesty now? Vakshuria says one reason is Russia, a temporary OPEC partner wanting to join and on its best behavior. For now. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
For now. Yeah, just because it seems to fit here, thought I'd mention benchmark U.S. crude rose today up about 1% to just over $59 a barrel. Still cheap, relatively. Equities today, not so bad. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Heavy rain and melting snow have brought historic flooding to parts of the Midwest. The Army Corps of Engineers says something like 200 miles of Missouri River levees in Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas have been compromised. Flood warnings are still up in at least a dozen states. At least two people have died. Thousands have been forced from their homes. And businesses are quite literally trying to pick up the pieces.
Hello.
Hi, I'm looking for Aaron Ross, please.
Speaking.
Aaron Ross runs Lagoon Pumping and Dredging Incorporated. They're in Columbus, Nebraska. So this is going to sound like a stupid question, but could you tell me what Lagoon Pumping and Dredging means? What does your company do?
We pump lagoons for a lot of different people, but like municipalities. We do ag lagoons, like dairy lagoons and hog lagoons, and we do industrial sites. We pump their lagoons out.
So we're talking manure lagoons here, right? Wastewater and stuff?
It's all basically wastewater. We do some fresh water. We have dredges that we do freshwater ponds for people taking silt out and things like that.
Mr. Ross is about 2 hours east of Omaha, and he says when the floodwaters came, so too did a big wall of ice. So let me ask you a question about that wall of ice coming through. How long have you been able to see your property? Did you get in as soon as the flooding hit?
No, we didn't get in until yesterday.
What'd you see when you got there?
Well, we saw that the ice came down and it shoved into the building and knocked several of the steel posts over, and sort of the roof is now sagging quite a bit. And then the water went through there about 6.5 feet deep, washed out the concrete underneath of it, and the building's pretty well destroyed.
So what are you going to do, sir?
Well, it looks like we're just going to have to haul a lot of stuff off to the scrapyard and start over. All we can do.
How much is starting over going to cost you, Mr. Ross?
Our preliminary estimate is going to be somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000.
You got any insurance for that, or are you out of luck?
Well, we have the building had $200,000.
Huh. So you're $500,000 out of pocket right now.
Right now.
So this is it's a family run business, as I understand it, right?
Yes, I employ about 30 people. I have my two sons working for me, and two nephews, a brother-in-law, and outside employees.
And I imagine the whole neighborhood up there, the whole area, is pretty much dealing with the same kind of thing.
They are. Everything south of the river, several businesses over here on this side of the road, and they've all been wiped out.
I almost don't even know what to say to you, sir. That's tragic.
Yeah, there's a gas station here, and his tanks were floating down the river, and it's a mess. We got stuff scattered out for about 10 miles south and east of here.
I don't imagine. I mean, you've been there forever, right? So I don't imagine there's any doubt but that you're going to rebuild and make it go again, right?
Well, first of all, we had to find out if the building is worth rebuilding. We intend to, but when you look at it like this, you got to think to yourself, do I really ever want to go through this again? And it's just it's a tough decision to make.
I bet. Aaron Ross, Lagoon Pumping and Dredging. We got him in Columbus, Nebraska. Mr. Ross, best of luck to you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for your kindness.
We started doing a thing a couple of months ago on the program, trying to get a sense from people out there in the economy of what the news du jour is doing to their spending habits. We've had a government shutdown come and go. We've had natural disasters happen. Last week, we got the Consumer Price Index. Inflation, it was up just a bit. So we got people back on the phone.
This is Kelly Koletsky. Recently, I had to purchase new kitchen appliances. I had to get two new appliances, and I did a lot of comparison shopping. And I feel like I did okay with my purchases, but the big issue was I was going to use my tax refund, but I found out that my refund was just really a fraction of what it has been in years past. I was really, really kind of shocked, and I had to dip into my savings when I really hadn't planned on it. But I'll continue to be really careful of my prices. I want to save as much as I can because I'm about 6 years away from retirement.
Hi, this is Ernesto from Chicago. I'm being very careful on what I spent. I'm a federal employee, and I had some plans to take one or two extended weekend trips this summer, and those are all put on hold because you don't know. Because, I mean, it seems not prudent to go ahead and take that expense. I don't know if it's my training or my nature, but I'm pessimistic, so I don't want to spend it if I don't have to.
My name is Kaya Price Dennis. I'm from Short Pump, Virginia. We haven't really seen any increase in food or anything that we use. We shop by the month, so my food bill has stayed pretty consistent for quite some time now. As it relates to extracurricular activities in my household, I have decided to start saving some more because my son is graduating from high school and he's going to college in the fall. So outside of college, we really haven't had to curtail our expenses or my budget. I was always taught to live within 30% of my budget, so I think I've done pretty good with that.
That was Kaya Price Dennis in Short Pump, Virginia, yes, from a basketball game. Ernesto, he didn't want us to use his last name. He's in Chicago. Kelly Koletsky is in Columbus, Ohio. Coming up.
It's kind of, exactly like a electric payment or a car payment, rent payment.
A beauty payment, if you will. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 65 points today, about 0.25%, 25,914. The NASDAQ advanced 25 points, 0.3%, 77.14. The S&P 500 up 10 points, also 0.3%, 28.32. General Motors, the target of a couple of presidential tweets this weekend, fell 0.2%. Ford, on the other hand, revved up 1.75%. Fiat Chrysler, up about 0.8%. As we reported, some ongoing questions about the Boeing 737 MAX and how it got approved for flight. Boeing off more than 1.75% today. Facebook, in the wake of that New Zealand shooting, down 3.3%. YouTube parent company Alphabet down about 0.1% today. Bonds fell, yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 2.60%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We did an interview last week with Bloomberg's Romy Varghese about the San Francisco City Assessor's Office and cities all over the country, really, about how sometimes information technology in the municipal sector just isn't quite what it ought to be.
In the tax assessor's office, they are running programs that date back to the 1980s.
And that conversation led us to this, us getting Carmen Chu, the elected assessor of the city of San Francisco, on the phone. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kai. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Maybe what we ought to do is start with what an assessor does, just real quick.
Sure. There are 58 counties in the state of California, and every single one has one elected assessor. And what we're charged to do is essentially to carry out the state's property tax laws. And so every single county generally has one. And for us, we bring in about $3 billion in revenue every single year for San Francisco. So it goes to pay for things like public safety, education, health services, a pretty important function.
One imagines, and the reason we are talking to you is a follow-up to an interview we did, I don't know, a week, 10 days ago, about automation and the systems that you all use in that office. Describe for me, would you, your IT environment?
Well, our IT environment, it's sufficient, but it definitely isn't maximizing our potential. So we are currently operating off of a 1980s legacy system. It's a green screen computer. So if you can imagine, go onto your computer and you open up our systems and you've got to use things like function one, function two keys to navigate around this green screen old system.
So, but the thing is, San Francisco is, I mean, within spitting distance of some of the smartest, most creative and accomplished technology companies in the world. What gives? And why can't you use technology to maximize your contribution to the city's coffers?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question, and we ask ourselves this all the time. And while you see many, many apps to talk about where to go get the best restaurants or where you might be able to avoid poo or other things, you don't necessarily find a company that is willing to build you a tax collection system.
How much of a handicap is it for you that, for lack of a better term, you know, fixing potholes is sexy, but getting you new software just ain't? Right.
Well, you know, sometimes people would say fixing the potholes aren't sexy either.
Yeah.
But I'd say they're almost equally necessary, right? And so for us in our systems, these old systems have a what you would call an awkward handshake between systems. There's a lot of errors and misunderstandings that happen between them. And so it leads to poor customer service and a lot of time for all of our staff to figure out what went wrong. And often when we're trying to help our customers, we're trying to piece together information from multiple sources, and that sometimes leads to confusion. And when you do see that, you end up having a lot of missed opportunities in terms of revenues that might come in and really trying to deliver the best customer service you can.
On that issue of customer service, obviously the taxpayers of the city and county of San Francisco are your customers. Also, I would imagine businesses trying to get a handle on all kinds of economic data out there.
That's right. That's right. You know, I think one of the hidden treasures in the city is actually our data and our information. We have decades and decades of information about every single property in the city and county of San Francisco. The hope, if we're able to inspire a change and overhaul our system, is that we're going to be able to access that information in a much more easy way so that we can make better choices going into the future about how our city is going to develop and change.
One imagines that you have conversations with the other 57 elected assessors in the other 57 counties besides San Francisco, but also, you know, the assessors in Atlanta and Chicago and, you know, Brooklyn or wherever. Are you hearing similar tales from your colleagues?
You know, the challenge is that California is, we've always known California to be unique, and it certainly is in the property tax world. Our colleagues typically have been the ones who most identify with what we're doing are the ones in California because we operate under these different laws. And so though there might be challenges in other states, I think simply they have a different system and different taxation laws that they have to adhere to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Carmen Chu is the San Francisco City Assessor, the elected assessor of the city and county of San Francisco. Ms. Chu, thanks very much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Kai. Yeah.
A story now about market saturation and what you do when that happens to you. Botox hit the market, give or take, 17 years ago. And all those unwanted lines and wrinkles began slowly disappearing from the faces of usually women of usually a certain age. And then fillers came along to replace what nature and gravity had done to cheeks and lips. And now here we are with the older crowd pretty much spoken for and the multi-billion dollar cosmetic enhancement industry looking for new recruits. Because, as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports, no matter how old you are, not getting any younger.
Monica Hickel and her two best friends, Becca and Katie, live in Columbus, Ohio, and do just about everything together.
We're all really close, so it's sort of like, you know, we meet to get our nails done, we meet sometimes to work out, we meet to go shopping, and we meet to go get our Botox.
Botox? Hickel and her friends are in their mid-30s.
We wanted to start young enough that people may never really notice that we got anything done, and it is just sort of part of our, you know, beauty routine that we go through.
Hickel says she spends around $1,000 a year to keep her forehead smooth and stave off the dreaded 11s. You know, those creases that form between your brows. She considers the treatments just another cost of living.
It's kind of, you know, exactly like an electric payment or a car payment, rent payment.
That kind of thinking has helped fuel a Botox boom among users who've come of age in the selfie culture. According to industry figures, in the past 5 years, injections have climbed more than 20% among 18 to 37-year-olds. So have the fortunes of Allergan, the pharma giant that makes Botox. And with preventing wrinkles now regarded as no biggie, there's, well, other work to be done.
Botox cosmetic is really the gateway. It is the gateway to all of aesthetics.
That's Carrie Strom, Allergan's VP for Medical Aesthetics. Allergan also makes Juvederm, a collection of fillers used to plump up lips, enhance cheeks, and smooth out creases. Strom says about half of millennials who get Botox also get filler. To get to the other half, the company is paying influencers and tripling its marketing budget to $150 million.
We really wanted to make Juvederm a verb.
Like it does in this ad, where a squad of energetic young women show how fabulous and fun flawless can be.
Ready to Juvederm it? Correct.
Alex Blinsky runs Plump, an injectable bar in New York City where East or West Coast lips can be had for $675. You can say goodbye to your gummy smile for $275 or buy some Insta-ready cheeks for just over $1,000. The stuff sells because
people are on Instagram and on their phones all day long, and they're sending each other pictures all the time.
Including Blinsky, who's 36.
I've done some fillers, and I've done a little fat melting under my chin. It makes me feel better about myself. I mean, that's what this is all about.
Blinsky, a doctor, left his job at an urgent care clinic 4 years ago to open Plump. Some doctors, though, were working injectables into their practice, like Ann Taylor, an Ohio plastic surgeon. She used to turn away women in their 20s and 30s. Now, they're 20% of her business, her own daughters included.
You know, my views have evolved. Like, okay, this is what they do.
And there's a growing industry to help them do it. Medical spas, which offer everything from fillers to Botox to laser treatments, have become a nearly $4 billion industry, according to the American Med Spa Association. That kind of growth has brought with it more risk, says Philip Langston. He's president of the American Academy of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery.
We have independent non-medical people opening up spas across the country, and there's no way that we can control the marketplace.
Because it's never been easier to sell youth to the young. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which Nathalie Loiseau, she's the French Minister for European Affairs, has a little fun at British expense. Loiseau told a French magazine this weekend that she has named her cat Brexit because he meows all the time to go out. And then when she opens the door, he just, and this is a quote, stays put, undecided. I mean, come on. It's pretty funny. Also, we are headed to Europe in a couple of days to make sense of the economic mess that British politicians have created. Shoot us your questions. What you want to know about Brexit, there's a place you can do that at marketplace.org. All right, we're done. That's it. That's all we got. The Dow up 65 points today, about 0.25%. The NASDAQ up 25 points, 0.3%. S&P 500 increased 10 points, also 0.3%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonder, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Daniel Shin. Our special projects desk is Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.